Making TV special.
Dennis. Made with creamy butter.
And you know what that means. It's happening. I can feel it.
Yep.
To the bus that's gonna take you back to Beelzebub. Get onto the bus that's gonna make you stop going rub-a-dub. Get onto the bus that's gonna take you back to Beelzebub. Get onto the bus that's gonna make you stop going rub-a-dub. Burn the air like the names of candy bars. Your mouth is cold and red, all in rings around your lap, laughing laughs. And it's a grind, grind, it's a grind, it's a grind, grind, it's a grind, grind, it's a grind, it's a grind, grind, it's a grind, grind, it's a grind, it's a grind, grind, it's a grind, grind, it's a grind, grind. Get onto the bus that's gonna take you back to Beelzebub. Get onto the bus that's gonna make you stop going rub-a-dub. Get onto the bus that's gonna take you back to Beelzebub. Get onto the bus that's gonna make you stop going rub-a-dub.
Bus to Beelzebub from Soul Coughing from their semi-legendary debut record from, is it 94? Ruby Vroom. Yellow number 5, indeed, and we're going to get right into that. But first, ladies and gentlemen, let me formally welcome you to the B-side of episode 178 for Media Monarchy. It's July 23rd, 2010, and my name is James Evan Pilato. I am your host and webmaster of the site and show MediaMonarchy.com, as well as what we're going to get into on this B-side, my sister sites, FoodWorldOrder.com and CyberspaceWar.com. And we're going to dive into all that, so let's just keep it going like we kicked it off from CNews. New report shows food dyes linked to cancer. Many artificial food dyes that color everything from breakfast cereal to ice cream should be banned because they pose cancer risks. A new report from the Center for Science and the Public Interest says these synthetic chemicals do absolutely nothing to improve the nutritional quality of food or safety of foods, but trigger behavior problems in children and possibly cancer in anybody, said CSPI Executive Director Michael F. Jacobson, co-author of the report, Food Dyes, A Rainbow of Risks. And we do have the PDF links for you to download that full report from CSPI. But continuing, manufacturers worldwide each year use about 7 million kilograms of artificial colors in common prepared foods like cookies, candy, pop, and ice cream. The big three most widely used food dyes, red number 40, yellow number 5, and yellow number 6, are known to be contaminated with carcinogens. Evidence suggests but does not prove that the other dyes, blue 1, blue 2, green 3, red 40, cause cancer in animals. The FDA already recognizes red 3 as a carcinogen, but the Ronald Reagan administration prevented a ban being placed on red 3 as required by U.S. law in the case of any food additive known to cause cancer. About 100,000 kilograms of red number 3 dye are used annually worldwide in processing food. Now, as a side note, as of this past Tuesday, European food manufacturers will be required to add a warning on packaging that a product may have an adverse effect on activity and attention in children if it contains one of 6 artificial colors. And again, more from CSPINet.org on the UK labeling. Those colors, some of the same as identified in the U.S. report, were found by a 2008 study at Britain's Southampton University to affect children's behavior. The colors, known as the Southampton 6, are sunset yellow, quinoline yellow, carmoisine, allura red, ponso 4R, and tartrazine. Yummy. So that's how we're going to kick off foodworldorder.com. And again, on these B-sides episodes, we're basically cramming everything in that's not going to fit in the main live episode. Of course, episode 179 coming right up. And some of those things we're going to get into in that episode, some of the things we're going to get into in this episode, but what we usually do again on these B-sides is cover the sister sites, foodworldorder.com, cyberspacewar.com, as well as other alternative media that we are lucky and proud enough to be involved with. We'll get to the latest from Clyde Lewis and groundzeromedia.org in just a little bit. But we have the weekly 10-minute video series, The New World Next Week. CorbettReport.com and MediaMonarchy.com in conjunction. I think we've just put up our 39th episode, Food Bubble, Government Weed, Competing Currencies. If that's not a provocative title that should hopefully spread these videos far and wide, I don't know what will. What I also want to mention is that we do have set up NewWorldNextWeek.com. It'll basically throw you over to the feed from our new NewWorldNextWeek.blip.tv that we're still working on getting going. Again, just a way to spread out and build out the redundancy, spread these videos out. They're the high-quality version, the full-quality version that Corbett Report uploads to their YouTube channel. And, of course, YouTube compresses it down. So newworldnextweek.com is your way to get the high-quality video. If you want to try and archive them, burn them off on DVD, they look great. They play well on television. You know, if you have one of those things. So the stories we hit on this latest New World Next Week: food bubble, government weed, and competing currency. Government weed and competing currency we're going to get to in the upcoming episode 179. However, the food bubble we're going to hit right now on foodworldorder.com. How Wall Street starves millions and gets away with it. This all sources back to a Harper's Magazine article that you have a, you got to have a subscription to get the full thing, but fortunately on economics.aracacity.org, something like that. You can hit up this full article, and again, as we always say, save all your articles. Just make little simple PDFs, archive them. That way they can't go down the memory hole. And again, information wants to be free. And that's what we're trying to do in the alternative media. So from time to time, we bust on the foundation-funded, controlled opposition of media outlets like Think Progress or, in this case, Democracy Now. That's not to say that they're in on it or that they don't do good work, such as this case. There's two clips posted up. I put the playlist together for you. Again, youtube.com/MediaMonarchy, where they have the author of this article, Kaufman, on Democracy Now, talking about the food bubble, how Wall Street starves millions and gets away with it.
Well, while Goldman Sachs agreed Thursday to pay $550 million to resolve a civil fraud lawsuit filed by the SEC, Goldman has not been held accountable for many of its other questionable investment practices. A new article in Harper's Magazine examines the role Goldman played in the food crisis of 2008, when the ranks of the world hungry increased by 250 million. The article is titled "The Food Bubble: How Will Wall Street Starve Millions and Got How Wall Street Starved Millions and Got Away with It."
The author of the article, Frederick Kaufman, joins us now. He's a contributing editor at Harper's Magazine. Well, explain. We're talking about Goldman Sachs today. This they call it a landmark settlement, but they made more after hours and trading last night than they will have to pay. So let's look at Goldman Sachs and its record overall.
Yeah, this is really, it's really outrageous. And on a certain level, this this reform bill is really a sham, because it does not cover in any way, shape, or form what Goldman Sachs, and really, let's be honest, it wasn't just Goldman, it was Goldman, and it was Bear, and it was AIG, and it was Lehman, it was Deutsche, it was all across the board, JP Morgan Chase. What these banks were able to do in commodity markets, really, which reached its peak from 2005 to 2008 in what is now known as the food bubble. And as Juan points out, this is unconscionable what happened in the sense that their speculation and their restructuring of these commodity markets pushed 250 million new people into food insecurity and starving, and brought the world total up to over a billion people. This is the most abysmal total in the history of the world.
Now, what were these commodities markets like before the Wall Street firms got involved? And you have a haunting picture, especially of the Minneapolis exchange, or what it was before, what it was like. Could you talk about how things operated and then what Goldman Sachs did precisely?
The wheat markets in particular in this country are the outcome of a process of development of over 150 years. And that is why from about 1903 to 2003, the real price of wheat in this country has gone down. And this was one of the great reasons for America's great 20th century. The fact that we had cheap food, we had cheap bread, and Goldman in 1991 came up with a new idea and a new product, which, as I said before, completely restructured this market and completely threw it out of whack. But before we go there, we just have to maybe review for a second a little bit about how these markets worked and what kept that wheat price stabilized. And Juan, you mentioned the Minneapolis Grain Exchange, this kind of obscure syndicate in the Midwest, which is where the price of this particular kind of wheat, hard red spring wheat, which is the most widely traded wheat in the world, and it's the most widely exported wheat from the American continent. And we kind of set the world price on this wheat. This is where it happens. What's the history of that price being stabilized? Is you have traditionally in the wheat futures market two kinds of players. One of the farmers and the millers and the warehousemen, right? And this, of course, includes players like Domino's Pizza and Sara Lee and General Mills. Very large business capitalist stakes are in this wheat market, right? And they are called bona fide hedgers because they're actually buying and selling real wheat. As the price fluctuates in the futures markets, you also traditionally have speculators in this market, people who are don't want wheat, don't have any place to put it if they bought it, but they're making money off buy orders and sell orders as the price fluctuates each day, and hopefully they're bringing in some money for themselves every day. That's the idea. Now, the key here is that both the bona fide hedgers and the speculators, every time they buy, they're also selling, and every time they sell, they eventually buy. So their positions are cleared off at the end of the day. Okay, Goldman, we have to understand, and a lot of these banks are not interested in the particular structure of any of these markets. I think it's a lot of mistake people make when they think about how these bankers are working. We think that they're actually interested in the markets. We think that they're... No. What they're after are very large pools of cash for themselves. They're after accumulating huge pools of money that they can do with whatever they like on a day-to-day basis, right? And so Goldman in 1991 came up with this idea of the commodity index fund, which really was a way for them to accumulate huge piles of cash for themselves. It wasn't really about the markets anyway. The market was just an excuse. And so the fact that they threw these wheat markets out of whack didn't really matter to them. How did this work? Instead of a buy and sell order, like everybody does in these markets, they just started buying. It's called going long. They started going long on wheat futures. Okay? And every time one of these contracts came due, they would do something called rolling it over into the next contract. So they would take all those buy promises they had made and say, okay, we'll buy more later. And plus we're gonna buy more now. And they kept on buying and buying and buying and buying and accumulating this historically unprecedented pile of long-only wheat futures. And this accumulation created a very odd phenomenon in the market. It's called a demand shock. Usually prices go up because supply is low, right? That's the idea. There's not a lot of supply, so the price goes up. In this case, Goldman and the other banks had introduced this completely unnatural and artificial demand to buy wheat. And that then set the price up. Now, a lot of people are saying, oh, it was biofuel production, it was drought in Australia, it was floods in Kazakhstan. Let me tell you, hard red wheat generally trades between $3 and $6 per 60-pound bushel. It went up to $12, then $15, then $18, then it broke $20. And on February 25th, 2008, hard red spring futures settled at $25 per bushel. This is completely beyond the pale.
Completely beyond the pale. Real conspiracies surround our lives all around. The food bubble. How Wall Street starved millions and got away with it. Now, of course, Goldman being the main boogeyman that's going on right now, but Frederick Kaufman does correctly say that it's not just them, it's all of them. And, of course, Goldman, biggest donor to Obamasiah, as we noted back during campaign time back in 2007 and 8 on MediaMonarchy.com. But they never quite trace it back to the main big boys. They never trace it back to the Rockefeller, the Rothschilds, the names, the families, the multi-generational serial killers. So the food bubble was the first story on the latest episode of The New World Next Week. And the way we closed out the episode previous to that got a lot of conversation going in the comments section as well as on my own Facebook.com/Media Monarchy. And I think it shows, again, how important these issues are. We've noted before that it may not be possible to end the war in Iraq or in the war in Afghan, Iraq. But we do have some kind of say in what we put down our gullet. And I think that's only going to make foodworldorder.com that much more important. And again, thanks to folks who send news tips. I think you'll find 9 times out of 10, they usually make their way onto the site and show. So again, don't hesitate. Send me news tips, links, mediamonarchy@gmail.com. And I can't respond to everything, but again, it's all completely appreciated. 46,000 dairy farms closed down in the last 10 years. And as you might recall, we ran out of time last week and weren't able to go over all the other alternative news that we're going to go over in this B-side. So now we're digging back in a week or so ago on foodworldorder.com from AllGov. 46,000 dairy farms closed in the last 10 years. Times are especially bad for dairy farmers across the U.S. About 40% of all dairy farms, or 46,000, went out of business over the last decade due to falling milk prices and rising costs. A big problem resides in the Federal Milk Marketing Order, FMMO, system, which the U.S. government created during the Depression as a way to keep dairy farmers in business. Today, however, the FMMO system has become a weapon used by huge dairy companies to accomplish what some nefarious goal-paying farmers... That's a garbled sentence. Let's start that again. Today, however, the FMMO system has become a weapon used by huge dairy companies to accomplish that same nefarious goal, paying farmers as little as possible. This sourcing back to gracelinks.org, writing for the Grace Foundation. There's more links you can read about the FMMO and ecocentrism.org, allgov.com. And let's keep digging. From the Telegraph, mystery trader buys all Europe's cocoa. Even Willy Wonka might struggle to use this much chocolate. Somebody bought 241,000 tons of cocoa beans. The purchase was enough to move the entire global cocoa markets, sending the price to the highest level since 1977 and triggering rumors and intrigue in the city. That would be the City of London, the world's money central. In its own little standalone city-state, much like the District of Columbia is perhaps the military center, and Vatican City being the religious center. And again, those families, bloodlines, organizations, societies, roundtables, serial killers, they'll get you with one of those things. It's unclear which person or group of traders was behind the deal, but it was the largest single cocoa trade for 14 years. The cocoa beans, which are sitting in warehouses in either the Netherlands, Hamburg, or closer to home in London, Liverpool, or Humberside, is equivalent to the entire supply of the commodity in Europe and would fill more than 5 Titanics. That's a telling metaphor. They're worth £658 million. That's UK pounds. But we do have the update. UK financier Anthony Ward behind the $658 million cocoa trade. What does this all mean? I can't exactly say. Had it remained secret, it would perhaps all be that much more tantalizing, but it just shows you nakedly all out in front the moves that are going on with the elite. Again, they've meant to pull a controlled demolition, but now it's perhaps getting out of their own hands. And we're going to see that theme and meme run throughout today's episodes, as we do and have from week to week. Moving the deck chairs and rats jumping ships. But from one of the great news sites, of which there are tons, it's hard to keep up with all the amazing new alternative media outlets, ActivistPost.com has a great one on using local organic cooperatives to defeat globalists. You're not alone in wondering what's the best way to fight against all this. Call it globalism, call it Fabian socialism, fascism, New World Order, whatever you want to call it, there's a vastly growing human tribe that understands your frustrations of feeling like a helpless fly caught in an inescapable spider web. It can seem defeating the more we learn about the criminal nature of the ruling elite, their plans, their desires to have absolute control, and their infrastructure that's darn near complete to achieve their goals. However, there is an incredibly easy solution and powerful weapon for defeating the elite. It's called local food. That article goes into great detail. We just have the snippet for you to whet your appetite, if you will. But a nice way to follow that up is from Food Freedom, 10 Mistakes to Avoid at the Farmer's Market. And again, hopefully we're going to see these things become more and more of a reality. And hopefully that's a way. Take your money out of the banks and start spending it locally. And the last thing on this, using local organic co-ops to defeat globalists, we have a quick update on GMWatch.org. Bayer loses their fifth straight trial. We also know from STLtoday.com, rice farmer is awarded $500,000 in case over crop contamination, and that again concerns Bayer Crop Science. But on the quick 722 binge and purge, short and sour, we note, disgustingly enough, from foodsafetynews.com, that it's safer to eat off a toilet seat than an office desk. And you can read all the disgusting facts on there. We also have, over on Yahoo, eat this, 6 beverage industry secrets they don't want you to know. And they do, fortunately, mention things like BPA and some of the other things going on in your beverages. So again, a lot of this stuff is coming out, as things pretty much have to do, in a way. Revelation of the method, if you will. I think the important thing to remember in all these developments is that, whether we're talking about food or media or politics or any of these things, and you can draw analogies between them all, is that you'll see when people naturally want to go grassroots and get outside, you're going to see those same organizations offer you another alternative. So just when you think you're getting out of it, you're stepping into another pre-constructed box, and that's what we're trying to all learn here and tell each other, hey, you know, don't step there. So that is all the latest from foodworldorder.com. Again, that site's been going for about a year and a half now. You may notice a little bit of layout changes on foodworldorder.com. You may see that come more and more. And again, as I've slowly put out requests and folks have written me, and like I said, I've not gotten back to everybody, but it's all being saved and organized. Talking about signs and banners and some graphic design and things like that, we're going to try and slowly put it all together. Having said all that, let's get to the latest media from two of my faves. First, episode 138 from CorbettReport.com, Geoengineering and You. As the band of eugenicists attain riches and power, they are moving their geoengineering agenda further into the open, from space mirrors and iron dumping to cloud creation and persistent contrails. Billions are being spent on altering our planet. This is another great audio/video version of an episode from CorbettReport.com, doing more and more amazing videos. And again, I'm so stoked to be involved in New World Next Week with CorbettReport.com. Latest interviews, latest videos, monthly interview with Bob Chapman on the economic situation, the Sunday update on the real terrorists, 9/11 FOIAs denied, and economic realism. That is another viral video. And again, huge hat tip to all that CorbettReport.com does. As well, my man Clyde Lewis of GroundZeroMedia.org. Most recent episode, again, live every Sunday night here in Portland, Oregon on KUFO 101.1 FM, blasting out 50-plus thousand watts all around the city and beyond. And then taken worldwide by ZeroPointRadio.com, and that's where you can get the archives of these episodes. Commercials chopped out, ready to go, perfect. But they need your help. ZeroPointRadio.com needs donations, and from what I can gather and looking at their chip-in, they haven't gotten any yet. So I ask again, hopefully, folks that have maybe thrown some thankful donations my way, if we can spread the wealth around, if you will, and please help ZeroPointRadio.com so they don't disappear. Science fiction and spiritual poverty was the latest episode, featuring guest Matt Haley, MattHaley.com, Haley like the comet. He is I believe, comic book writer, illustrator, graphic designer, has done things also in film and television, I believe, was a great guest, because he was a little bit lighter, to the heavy things that Clyde is talking about, that basically science fiction and media being a way to supplant religious thought with a sort of new spirituality, highly favored by the cryptocracy as a way to acclimate society to the desired futures proposed by the elite. Problem, reaction, solution, revelation of the method, predictive programming, the mighty Wurlitzer, call it what you will. It was a pretty creepy episode, again, tying in all the amazing memes of vampire culture and the copycat effect, and as well, The Dark Knight, which I'll say I did actually watch yesterday on DVD. And of course, we have Inception, and we'll have a note about Inception coming up on episode 179. Very interesting. And I'll mention Dark Knight was really well done. I guess there's no way it could have paid off or held up to the hype and expectation now, seeing it 2 years later on my TV, as opposed to seeing it big and loud when it was new and in the zeitgeist. And again, it's basically about the chaos meme, and Clyde got into a bunch of amazing things I didn't know about Heath Ledger and his actually clown background, and clowns being actually corpse paint. Fascinating. The episode is linked up for you right there to download and listen to and subscribe. But you gotta donate, or these things are all going to disappear, and even the links that I've been doing and posting up, they're all going to die. So, needless to say, again, my friends, if you find alternative media useful and beneficial to you, that's ultimately, again, tying it right back to what we were talking about with food. We can tie supporting alternative non-corporate media, we can tie that exactly into buying local food and getting involved in making that happen wherever you are. It's all connected. I know I keep saying that. I said it several times on the last New World Next Week, but it's true. And again, as you go through all this data mining and information more and more, you'll start to see it more and more, that things are connected, that there is something happening here. Whether it's being let happen on purpose or made to happen on purpose, we don't really subscribe to the accidental theory of history. There is a conspiratorial red thread running throughout mankind's history. And we generally see it as what's really manifesting right now, in a way, is that it's a lot of times the banksters versus the people. But having said all that, we're now going to shift over to cyberspacewar.com for all the latest on the attacks of outer space and inner space. Chinese airport closed after fiery UFO is spotted flying over the city. This going back actually to July 11th and probably the 10th. Chinese airport was closed after a mysterious object was spotted in the sky, and there are some amazing photos. Interestingly enough, let's hop down quickly. A local bus driver, giving his name only as Yu, said he had seen a strange glowing object in the sky late on Wednesday afternoon. The thing suddenly ran westwards fast, like it was escaping from something, he said. Inbound flights were diverted to nearby airports, while outbound flights were delayed for 3 or 4 hours. Some Chinese experts claimed that the strange sight was actually debris from a U.S. intercontinental ballistic missile. Chinese officials later said that they knew what the object had been, but were unable to make it public because there was a military connection. As there always seems to be. And I think ultimately that's why we see so little disclosure, if you will, about unidentified flying objects, because they like us to speculate about little green men and take it down wild, crazy roads. And again, that extrapolates out to not releasing Pentagon attack video from 9/11, because it's better for everybody to all speculate about ridiculous things, muddying and poisoning the whole well of it all. Oh, tangents. You derail my brain. Let's quickly keep moving, my friends. Scientists find most massive star ever discovered. This from the Associated Press. Huge ball of brightly burning gas drifting through a neighborhood galaxy may be the heaviest star ever discovered, 100 times more massive than the sun. Scientists said this last Wednesday after working out its weight for the first time. Those behind the find say the star, called R136A1, may have once weighed as much as 320 solar masses. Astrophysicist Paul Crowther said the obese star, twice as heavy as any previously discovered, has already slimmed down considerably over its lifetime. It's burning itself off with such intensity that it shines at nearly 10 million times the luminosity of the sun. And I believe we do link up in there that the sun is a mass of incandescent gas, a gigantic nuclear furnace. And I think going along with that quite well, this from the register.co.uk, underground tunnel complexes found on the moon. Space boffins believe they may be on the verge of discovering a vast hidden network of tunnels beneath the surface of the moon. The tunnels aren't thought to be the work of long extinct or perhaps still surviving intelligent moon aliens, perhaps driven to adopt a subterranean existence by a notional disappearing atmosphere eons ago, nor is any involvement by Tibetans, Elvis, or others seeking a secluded dwelling far from prying human eyes suspected. Instead, top moonologists think that they might be on the track of lava tubes not dissimilar to those of Earth. A lava tube, unsurprisingly, is a tube in solid surrounding rock around at which some point liquid lava has flowed or is still flowing in some earthly cases. When the lava cools and solidifies, there's often an open space left above its surface, forming a tunnel. More links in there to Duluth News Tribune, TechEye.net, and RedOrbit.com. Let's get to two big DEF CONs on Cyberspace War. Again, our DEF CONs are just our ugly news purge list of headlines. So, going back to 7/15, July 15th, tracked, traced, and databased. 10 ways were being tracked, traced, and databased from, again, the aforementioned fantastic activist post.com. Consumer group sniffs Congresswoman's open Wi-Fi. That's from Threat Level, and we're going to see the story pop up and bob and weave throughout the rest of these stories on this B-Side episode 178 from MediaMonarchy.com. This is what it sounds like when the internet cries, Prince bashing the internet, saying it's totally over. White House plan to safeguard cyberspace. More on that from Computer World. Meanwhile, cybersecurity consensus says we haven't done enough. That's from the Washington Times. Again, beating the drums for some iPatriot Act. NASA space shuttle firm to cut 1,000 jobs. That's from the BBC. Hacking the electric grid. You and what army? Danger Room notes. Again, the overhyped threat agenda coming about a cyber 9/11. Former NSA executive Thomas A. Drake may pay high price for media leak, which we reported to you several months ago when that happened. More on it from the Washington Post and Threat Level. NSA executive leaked after official reporting process failed. So essentially, he was a whistleblower. And as we're going to see, much like the previous puppet administration, the current puppet administration is no real friend to whistleblowers, despite some of the chatter and lip service you may hear. It's in the action. Mobile phones cause memory loss. That's from webuser.co.uk, and it's not necessarily saying that it's zapping your brain, because it is. It's just saying you're not remembering any numbers or any kind of information that you used to. U.S. scientists create cloth that can listen and produce sound. Another amazing article posted on redicecreations.com. Thousands of laptops stolen during 9-hour heist. That's an interesting story from the Associated Press. And the last thing on this first news purge, teens using digital drugs to get high. That's from Threat Level, and I believe last week we had a clip prepared. I don't have it this time. But ultimately, it's called iDosing, and it's been this amazing online meme that a lot of news networks have picked up on of somebody, please think of the children. But it's a completely hoax thing. It's the idea that you could listen to something and it'll make you totally trip out. Now, meanwhile, that is slightly true. It's being sold as if something really is being delivered into your kid's head through the computer. So, track that iDosing meme. As we now jump over to the latest DEF CON 722, bleaker for bloggers. False flag cyber attack could take down the internet. This is what's been building. Tarpley calls it virtual flag terrorism. And some of this does tie in with some of the kind of loud goings-on of the InfoWars team and internet censorship and Google. And some say it's just a lot of, you know, self-promotion. But we're not really into attacking other folks in the alternative media. You can decide for yourself. Good information is good information. That's why we don't follow any kind of leader. But this meme is there. And it all swirls around the I-9-11 event with an iPatriot Act to follow. It swirls around this new Washington Post Top Secret America report. It swirls around with Google and cyber attacks and all those things. It's all connected. Cyberspacewar.com. That's why we call it that. But quickly, Obama joins UN to dictate acceptable behavior on the net. And again, a lot of these are coming from Kurt Nemo and Paul Joseph Watson and the InfoWars gang. Feds ignore First Amendment, shut down thousands of blogs. I believe it's something like 75,000. And that whole story ties in with the FBI and raids and WordPress and I forget the blog company's name. But again, Google's China changes in line with the law. That means, yes, they are censoring for the most favored model nation of China. More on that from the Washington Post. And WikiLeaks reopens for leakers. That's from Threat Level. I believe they have a new way of submitting classified information, where we'll also note that the feds are, or were, and still are, but specifically, CNET reported that the feds were looking for WikiLeaks founder at a New York City hacker event. Federal agents appeared at a hacker conference last Friday looking for Julian Assange, the controversial face, public face, controversial figure, the public face of WikiLeaks. Eric Corley, publisher of 2600 magazine and organizer of this Next Hope conference, Hackers on Planet Earth 2010 in Midtown Manhattan, said five Homeland Security goons appeared at the conference a day before Assange was scheduled to speak. If he shows up, he will be questioned at length, Corley told CNET. Now, Corley announced on April 19th that Assange would be a keynote speaker, but by June 14th, after news of the arrest of Army Intel Specialist Bradley Manning leaked, the conference was warning that Assange might remain outside of the U.S. for fear of being arrested on related charges. Finally, on cyberspacewar.com, and that's the way we're going to wrap up this B-side episode 178 from MediaMonarchy.com for July 23rd, 2010. We have the press release up, and this connects to consumerwatchdog.org, and we have a lot more information from the Washington Post, from InfoWars, from Vimeo, from InsideGoogle.com. Google's Y spying and Intel ties prompt call for congressional hearing. Consumer Watchdog wants hearings on Google's ties to the CIA and NSA, citing new information about Google and their classified government contracts, and the internet giant's admitted Y spying activity, the aforementioned, you know, Y spying on Jane Harmon, which we're going to get to in this closing clip. But it all relates to the story, if you'll remember, when they were busted slurping up open Wi-Fi data and keeping it. Consumer Watchdog said it's more imperative now than ever for the Energy and Commerce Committee to conduct hearings into possible privacy violations by Google. In a letter to Committee Chairman Henry Waxman and Ranking Member Joe Barton, the nonpartisan, nonprofit public interest group's John Simpson wrote, quote, based on today's Washington Post referring to topsecretamerica.com, more on that in upcoming episode 179, it appears that Google holds classified U.S. government contracts to supply search and geospatial information to the U.S. government, with a link for more on that to Vimeo. In addition, White House records show that Google executives have been holding meetings with U.S. national security officials for undisclosed reasons. Finally, it also appears that Google's widely criticized efforts to collect wireless network data on American citizens were not inadvertent, contrary to the company's claims. As history has repeatedly shown, alliances between the U.S. intelligence community and giant corporations that collect data on American citizens can be a toxic combination where the U.S. Constitution is concerned. That's going to do it, my friends. We're going to go out with more on Google's Y spying. And yes, MediaMonarchy.com, CyberspaceWar.com, and FoodWorldOrder.com all just redirect to my Blogger blogs that are, of course, owned by Google. What are we going to do? My name is James Eppenpilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com. Stay tuned, my friends, for episode 179 as we now go out with Google's Y spying and intelligence NSA CIA ties, prompting calls for a congressional hearing from consumer watchdogs.
So is Google a Wi-Fi spy? Well, the feds are ogling Google tonight after complaints from a consumer watchdog group accusing the search giant of using its Street View technology to scan sensitive and private information from wireless networks of the influential and the powerful. NBC Bay's George Kidiam is live in Santa Clara with how that search giant is reacting to this scrutiny tonight.
Well, that's right, Jessica. The Google Street View car has been down this road at one time or another, and in neighborhoods all around the world for that matter. But it's not so much the pictures these cars take, but the gathering of your Wi-Fi data that has some people riled up. Ray Malapad is concerned these Google Street View cars are taking more than just pictures of his Santa Clara home. Google has acknowledged it has collected wireless network data while driving around.
I think that's somewhat invasion of privacy, and I'm entitled to privacy. And without the permission, of course, you know, I don't feel, you know, myself secured in a way.
Consumer Watchdog, the Santa Monica Consumer Advocacy Group, says it's concerned Google is in bed with the federal government. It's worried corporations like Google are forging alliances with the government to potentially spy on residents, and has asked Congress to look into this why spying.
We think it's time for Congress to look into this kind of action, where a private internet company seems to think it's reasonable to collect the public's private information without any sort of notice or permission.
But Google insists it has done nothing wrong, releasing a statement saying, as we've said before, it was a mistake for us to include code in our software that collected payload data. But we believe we did nothing illegal.
We have to call to question the assumption that people searching on the internet in their own home have any reason to expect that anyone else has access to that information. So we think it's very possible that Google did break the law.
Malapad says he's worried his emails and other private transactions may be gathered by the government or fall into the wrong hands.
They can say that, you know, they're not doing anything about it or giving it to some other people, but it can be disseminated at any time upon request by, let's say, the government or something, and you have no control over that.
Now, Consumer Watchdog specifically sent a letter to the Energy and Commerce Committee asking if it would hold a congressional hearing on this very issue. We're live in Santa Clara tonight. George Kitayama, NBC, Bay Area News.
Is Google a threat to national security? One consumer group is suggesting maybe.
Most people don't know how much this internet giant intrudes on their privacy.
The group Consumer Watchdog wants Congress to hold hearings about the way Google cruises the streets, taking pictures, but also collecting data from every Wi-Fi network it encounters. To dramatize the point, Consumer Watchdog went to the homes of members of Congress, like Jane Herman and Henry Waxman from L.A., and they discovered vulnerable Wi-Fi networks. The group is implying that Google is capable of snatching sensitive information discussed by members of Congress over a Wi-Fi connection.
We are joined now by John Simpson of Consumer Watchdog. Welcome.
Welcome. Nice to have you here. Now, you say you sniffed out some Wi-Fi networks that come to your conclusion. Explain what that means, and isn't that kind of the same data that you're collecting?
What we essentially did was identify the networks that belong to congressional members. What Google does is actually not only find the networks, but tap the data that is on some of them on the open networks. And they are storing that data in their servers. And what we're saying is we need to know what they've gotten, why they accumulated this material, and what they intend to do with it.
But you said Google has stopped doing that, correct?
They did when this came to light. They said we should not have been doing this, and we have stopped. But all of the information that they've gathered from these unencrypted networks is, in fact, in their servers right now.
Now, they're charging, as I said in my initial question, that that you actually revealed where they were and who was there. And they did not. So you revealed that it was Jane Harmon and Congressman Waxman as well, but they did not.
Well, we did point out that Jane Harmon has a vulnerable network, but we did not tap the information. What Google has been doing, if there is a vulnerable network, is essentially wiretapping, taking the information that is transmitted over, emails, that sort of thing.
Banking statements.
Exactly. Yeah.
But members of Congress are required to use encrypted methods. So how did this happen that perhaps Jane Harmon would be using something that's not encrypted?
I don't know. I mean, I wish the Congresswoman's networks were encrypted. And what all I can say is that we identified one from in her home residence that was unencrypted.
And that could happen to any of us, though.
That could happen to anybody. I mean, one of the main takeaways from this ought to be, if you have a wireless network, you should use all of the password protection and encryption that's available. And for whatever reason, these weren't. And I think you'll find that many ordinary people don't bother to do this. And that's part of the problem.
We recognize that this is the new technology, and it's a lot different than a news photographer walking down the middle of the street and taking video of a home, and because it is acquiring information. So what can consumers do to protect themselves besides a password? I mean, can you pass a law that prevents and the technology company from doing this?
Well, I think there needs to be some very clear privacy legislation enacted, which is, again, why this needs to be put back into the congressional court for a hearing. We need to get at the bottom of exactly what Google was doing, why they were doing it, and what they intended to do with the information. Then we can see effective legislation.
Okay. John Simpson, thank you. And your concern is that they have some information but have stopped doing this. Let me tell you what Google has to say about this. We contacted Google, asked them to respond to Consumer Watchdog's charge. A spokesman gave us this quote: "As we've said before, it was a mistake for us to include code in our software that collected data, but we believe we did nothing illegal. We're continuing to work with the relevant authorities to answer their questions and concerns."
Again, we appreciate you being with us tonight.
How would you explain it?
Combining music and stylized images.
I mean, so it's all remote control.
Each one of those images was electronically based.
Say out on my threat.
And that concludes our program for tonight.
Yo. This could really catch on.
I can't remember when I've been so moved.